Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show Live. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Makone Maja. Makone, how are you doing this fine Friday afternoon?
Couldn't be better with how sunny it is here in Polokwane. How about you, Nick?
Yeah, no, look, quite lovely, sort of perfect 18 degrees in Cape Town, sort of 18, 20 degrees. That's exactly where I like things to be. And just a lovely winter day in the south of South Africa. So I'm rather enjoying that. It has been a week with some wackiness, as one can expect from the news in South Africa. Lots of Matlanga Commission stuff, but we're not going to talk about that today because it's just ongoing. But I saw those people getting reprimanded for calling people chief. And people forgetting laptops and all sorts of things like that. Anyway, first, I think we're going to start off a little bit with March in March, Afroforum, and this clip, which comes from outside a court, the Cape Town Regional Court, I know I sometimes mispronounce names quite badly on this show. Nigerian names, I'm afraid, are a particular weak spot for me. But anyway, Beauty Queen, Miss South Africa contestant, Miss Nigeria winner, has been in many things. Chidima Adetshina, I think is how you say her name. She's been the subject of some controversy for a while. She was first came to public attention when she tried to run in the Miss South Africa a beauty pageant, with people saying that she was a Nigerian and not a South African, and therefore she shouldn't be allowed to run. Subsequently, there was an investigation which found that her mother may have potentially falsified her citizenship and her documents, and this had sort of passed on to her daughter. So in other words, her daughter was not legally a South African citizen. She had her identity papers revoked from her in October of 2024. She re-entered the country, was arrested, and has been fighting against her deportation since. So these were scenes that took place outside the Cape Town Regional Court, where members of March in March, or supporters of March in March, rather, I don't think they have members, were protesting against her, and things turned a little bit ugly.
You're not gonna hit anyone.
Right, so you get the idea. Some of those March in March protesters, I think, harassing one of her relatives, shouting, go home, footsack, and things like that. March in March has also been in the news this week because of a tie-up, a meeting of the minds, a discussion they had very publicly with Afroforum, where they said that they were going to be shifting their focus from just protests to some sort of institution-building stuff. Makone, let's start off by just talking about this before we move on to the Afroforum March in March thing. It is a bit weird, this one. So, you know, obviously, if she's broken the law, and the indication is that her mom broke the law and that she shouldn't have been in the country and all these sort of things. I mean, she was born in South Africa as well. So, you know, she's at least partially culturally South African and has a long history of growing up here. But okay, fine. You know, if there's going to be a deportation, be a deportation. But what exactly are March in March protesting here? Just that the flouting of the law, I guess, the most charitable way to put on it. And why such vitriol?
Yeah, I think it's bigger than just the charges that have been laid against her. I think she's become a symbol of the grievances maybe that people have with illegal immigrants. I remember leading up to her disqualification from the Miss South Africa competition and her subsequently being found to have actually been in the country illegally, South Africans felt that, when they were challenging her status and her citizenship as a South African, the media was doing the thing that it usually does, which is call people xenophobic and in a bit to sort of censor any legitimate questions about what Chidima's identity. But I think she's really a symbol of how people, and so people project to her their grievances about illegal immigration. So I think she's sort of become this icon. And you can see it in this clip, the vitriol that's being expressed to her as she drives away in that vehicle, to this individual who we identify as being affiliated with her. It seems that they did, he was there to support her at court to support Miss Adetshina, but then he subsequently, experiencing this rage from these community members in March. But it's so unreasonable, the attitudes of individuals at the protest.
I mean, if this was like a notorious Nigerian drug dealer being deported, then I would kind of get it, even though I wouldn't condone it. I'd say like, okay, well, I understand why people are reacting so violently, but like, the dang beauty queens coming here taking our jobs as beauty queens. It's not, this is not. They could have picked someone, I think, less sympathetic. This is not exactly top of the list for people who desperately need to be deported.
Which is why I think she's become that figure, that symbolic figure that people are now channeling all the grievances about illegal immigrants and the vitriol and the anger too, is not only how she rose to fame and, on the back of her rise to fame and ultimately notoriety, South Africans were being called xenophobic and all of these labels. She's now being targeted, I think, as this person that represents the refusal by illegal immigrants to self-deport, the alleged, what people are saying online, the arrogance of these illegal immigrants. But even if your grievances are legitimate, and some of them are about illegal immigration in the country, it doesn't warrant this level of anger from these individuals. Like it's there's a performance to this. There's an actual criminal, assault charge possible that could be laid against the individual who's quite literally seen striking this man with a
Traffic
trafficking
cone, yeah.
cone. None of this warrants that. And clearly, Chidima's already going through the courts, right? Going through the most legitimate forms of prosecution to test whether she really is in the country legally or not and whether she should be deported. So if this person is already undergoing, a criminal case at Chinima, that is, why then all of this? Why all of this drama? And it also being directed to innocent individuals like the guy who, yes, I can see he's sort of provoking them, but not to the levels that it warrants this, performance of anger and vitriol and to the extent that it even breaches to assault. And this is my problem with March and March. Is your legitimate grievances don't give you the right to go and accost people, to assault people, to the
Yeah,
extent that you
exactly.
can break the law, right? Then you yourself should face the full wrath of the law. If you are accusing people of breaking the law while simultaneously breaking it yourself in the name of advancing justice, no, then there's no difference between you and the actions of criminality that you're undertaking and the ones that you're accusing illegal immigrants of committing in the country. The problem is that March and March as an organization, and even the leader, who I think is a very smart woman, Jacinta Ngobese, have never once condemned the violent actions by March and March demonstrators against illegal immigrants. In fact, they deny that such evidence of criminality and assault are taking place against illegal immigrants. And even when they are documented as visibly as they are in this video, she will never once come out and say, even though she will ahead of a march say, guys, we are not violent, we don't hit people, We just want them to be gone. We'd rather, you know, hand them to the police or whatever. She will say that yes. ahead of a march. But in event that there are actual violent actions being conducted and being perpetrated against immigrants, illegal or otherwise, she will never come out and condemn them. And that's why she can say on one hand that they don't support violence. But if when people that protest in the name of March and March, an organization that you run, if those people carry out those violent actions and you're quiet, then you are absolutely complicit.
Not criminally, but morally.
Morally complicit.
And this is, this is something that also, I think it has been, you kind of really nailed exactly what sort of irritates me about this, the sort of approach that March and March has taken, this kind of like denial and deflect and circle the wagons, you know, fortify the lager kind of approach. It's very clear that at least in some instances, some of the violence and anger and stuff being directed at foreigners, legal or illegal. And while in the rhetoric, March and March, I think, has been quite disciplined about focusing on illegal, on the ground, it's been much more blurry and, you know, people just get targeted for speaking funny. There have been, you know, sort of vested interests and sort of mafia types trying to run extortion and that kind of thing. And in my mind, a more honorable organization would say, look, this is not what we're about. We're not about extorting people, shaking down people for money or getting our people into jobs or whatever. We're here because we're against lawlessness. We're here because we're against this issue. And that, as you say, there's just complete reluctance on any level by March and March to kind of push back on that stuff and indeed to declare it all some sort of, you know, op or fake news, or it's just the police lying, or it's the government lying, or it's the foreigners lying, which is a very toxic way of interacting in our politics, unfortunately. One which we have an awful lot of already, so we don't need more, quite frankly. So indeed. Let's move on to go ahead.
Zilla managed to extract some concessions from her, including that it's possible that, you know, the people are receiving the deadline of the 30th of June, which she denies that it was a deadline that signals violence, right? That violence will, after this deadline, violence will be unleashed upon foreigners. She says that wasn't her intention. And Zilla says in the letter that she writes to her after her meeting that even though you deny that your intention is not to signal, you know, that violence be committed upon these individuals, illegal immigrants, you realize that it is a possibility. You reconcile yourself with the fact that it is a possibility, that is how it is being received. Those were, and we said at the time that those were very valuable concessions because she's able to reconcile herself with the possibility of violence, right? But still denies that it's taking place, still denies that, you know, people that are donned in March and March gear are still effecting this violence upon people. So she was warned ahead of the march, you know, not just by Zilla, by, you know, many in the media, many analysts. And still, when it is taking place and when it is recorded, she takes to that dismissive approach of, you know, acting like it is not. That is unaccountable, and that is not a mark of a very good leader.
Yeah, I agree. So let's move on to the AfriForum March and March thing. So you reminded me recently that Jacinta Ngubesi Zuma had held a press conference where she had said that she wanted to turn March and March into the AfriForum for Black people, whatever that means. And subsequent to that, she had had this meeting with AfriForum where they said they were basically going to work together to develop institutions in the country and development and coexistence and love and peace and all those good things. I think some people were, you know, pleased by this. They said, look, here's two civil society organizations outside of the kind of usual thing in government looking at building stuff and building institutions. And that aspect of it, I think, is genuinely good. This is also, you pointed out to me in our pre-show discussion, there is something in the way of, this is very much a kind of middle finger to the sort of pan-Africanist EFF race nationalist narrative, actually, about about these issues is that there's been this big sort of drumbeat from the kind of EFF wing of South African politics saying, no, you see, the real enemy are actually the whites, and you're, you know, attacking your black brothers and sisters here, and that's why this is an evil organization, that's why we must oppose March and March, and that's why, you know, they must dismiss what they're saying, that's why we can't allow xenophobia. Xenophobia is only fit for, you know, the whites who are guests in our country, as the EFF or its minions often say. And I think somewhat amusingly, Jacinta has decided, as you put it in the pre-show discussion, to kind of give a middle finger here to that strand of our politics. So what do you make of all this? Some people said they were surprised by this, but neither you nor I was particularly surprised by this meetup. What's your take on all this?
Yeah, I can't think of a bigger middle finger to the crowd of people that, from what I've seen on social media, she's been pressurized to, you know, target white South Africans as the real foreigners. You know, that's what Africans from around the continent have often said, you know, is that your real problem is actually the whites in South Africa, that we are like brothers in arms. We shouldn't be targeting each other because we share, you know, the same race or whatever. But can't think of a bigger middle finger to that group than partnering with another group that's perceived to be like the most racist of South Africans. It may not be true, but that is the perception that they have. And her saying, we must put South Africa first, and it doesn't matter whether they are whites or not. Them and us, meaning March and March and AfriForum, are both South Africans. They have a vested interest in the prosperity and the wellness of this country. And there's absolutely no reason why they shouldn't band together to advance those interests of ensuring that South Africans' interests are placed first and ahead of all others. And so I really do think she's a very smart woman. She and very calculating, clearly.
I think it also shows maybe a broader collapse of some of the old race nationalist narratives in the country, that this kind of thing can go ahead from a sort of populist organization.
A refusal to subscribe to them. Absolutely. She's rebelling against being fit into this box when she actually doesn't have to. She could likely be more successful if she wasn't seen shaking hands with you know, members of AfriForum, and rather turning to the EFF MK types, right? So she's doing this even when it could come at a cost to her success as a, you know, a prominent political actor in South Africa. To the idea that, you know, and I've seen a few media headlines saying an unlikely meeting of these two organizations that couldn't be more different, I don't think that's true. I often describe the issues related to xenophobia, I'm using air quotes, and the issues related to genocide, also using air quotes, genocide against Afrikaners, that they're two sides of the same coin. These are two groups that have been disenfranchised and disgruntled for so long. And whenever they want to ventilate legitimate grievances, the media, the academic class, the analyst class, rush to silence them as some sort of racists, and, you know, particularly the genocide crowd, racists and people that don't want to be part of South Africa and people that are just always looking to complain about South Africa rather than, you know, actually blending into this rainbow nation. And then on the, you know, on the xenophobia side, when they have issues, they're quickly shut down as xenophobes, you know, even when those issues on both sides deserve attention from the government. And I think we're seeing populist actors seize upon those grievances of South Africans that have for so long just not been attended to, seize upon them and capitalize on them for political purposes. Jacinta Ngobese said that she will now be pivoting from March and March, or morphing March and March into this movement she's calling the SA First Forum, the South Africa First Forum. That's a new entity that she's registered, and that it'll do more than just, you know, protest against illegal immigration. She's talking about building schools and supporting education initiatives for Black South Africans. And so that explains her meeting with an organization like AfriForum. AfriForum is deemed to wield a lot of political influence, to have a very big influence on Washington, for example. You know, so they are perceived to have significant lobbying powers in the right channels. And so I think she's making a risk assessment and seeing that it's not sustainable, it's not feasible, and that it ultimately she may lose control over these March and March demonstrations, and is looking to channel that energy towards more, you know, legitimate, upstanding organizations that will actually channel their advocacy to proper channels like parliament, like people in government, rather than pulling people out of spaza shops and pulling Uber drivers off cars and ripping them off their motorbikes. But ultimately, these are two groups that don't espouse views that I, or a vision of South Africa that I can subscribe to. I can agree that, you know, there is the violence that is unleashed upon South African farmers is very worrying and needs attention from the government. You know, rural safety and security is a big issue in South Africa that has for so long been unattended. Similarly, I can agree about illegal immigration and its excesses and the problems that it poses on our resources, and the fact that there are people in this country that we just don't even know and can commit crimes with impunity. I agree with both those issues. But in terms of the vision they are projecting of what South Africa can be, which is focused on, you know, race and focused on, you know, your group identity as being the most paramount of your identity, rather than carving out a South African identity that you're a part of, that's values-based.
Yeah, exactly. I think that phrase Afroforum for Black People kind of really, you know, it sort of it singles that out. It's like, why not Afroforum for South Africans? Why not, you know, like, there is a space, obviously, in our society for people to, you know, have cultural organizations and experience their own culture and develop their own culture and all those sort of things. And but at the same time, there is also, as you say, this vision of South Africa as essentially this patchwork of ethnicities, and that's the primary way it should be organized or visioned. But that, to me, is exactly the wrong way to look at the country. The country should be seen as made of communities that are sort of self-chosen rather than ones that are defined ethnically or racially or whatever. It should be a country where, you know, what it means to be an Afrikaner is not based on the color of your skin. It should be based on the language you speak and the cultural practices you engage in. And this sort of idea of it's almost kind of a resurrection of a sort of more benign sounding separate development sort of thing, right? It's like, well, we'll build our institutions for us here and you build your institutions for that there. And that's not a, you know, there are countries in the world that do organize themselves like that. And none of them are particularly places, I think, where people want to live. I think Fiji is one, Lebanon is another one, although it's, you know, it's religion there. So, you know, that part of this does make me a little bit kind of uncomfortable. Building institutions, developing education, that stuff sounds great. But I think the sort of bigger picture vision of what the country should look like, I think, as you say, it should be different.
Absolutely, Nick.
All right. So we've gone long on that one. So I think we may only have time for one more, but let's see how it goes. This one was a video clip you pointed out to me, and I think both of us watching it would be driven absolutely crazy. Now, this appears to be it's a YouTube short, I think, from News24, which seems to be part of a series that I actually haven't looked into that they seem to be doing on women in South Africa and women leaders and that sort of thing. And it's an interview with ANC Deputy Secretary General Nomvula Mokonyane.
Vula Mokonyane, the first DSG of the African National Congress. Catch me on the next episode of Real Politic.
It sounds like you have some pockets of sisterhood in the ANC, but I think we've witnessed situations where women in the ANC don't support each other. And I don't think it's limited to the ANC, because women in corporate, you know, they behave a certain way against other women. What do you think lies behind that?
So now I've led in the ANC without being supported by the ANC Women's League.
Sure.
Yes. I'm the DSG now. The Women's League was not supporting me. It's the Women's League that was running around Nazareth there for 47 minutes. Yeah? Looking for a woman to contest me. I'm a member of the Women's League. I'm an activist. I believe in the struggles for the liberation of women. But men in the ANC, realizing that here is one nominee who stands a chance of not being contested. I was going to go in and oppose because I didn't belong to a slate.
I didn't
belong to a slate. And I could see these men, man. Aaron Motsoaledi was running around. Derek Anekom was running up and down. Zamani Sol was pushing the Northern Cape that side. Huh? Oscar Mabuyane was on that side.
Sure.
I'm sitting there, I can see. And I'm not gossiping because they know what they did.
Yeah.
Montli Kungubele. Me and Montli are friends. We can even drink. But Montli has never supported me. I don't support him on issues of leadership. It has always been like that. I could see these people.
McConnor, may I perhaps venture a guess as to why Aaron Motsoaledi and Derek Hanekom were running around trying to find someone to oppose her as Deputy Secretary General? It may not be because she was a woman. It may in fact be because she's been implicated in all sorts of really horrific, embarrassing corruption by the Zondo Commission. And these guys were like, oh my God, this is going to make the ANC look really bad if she gets elected unopposed as ANC Deputy Secretary General. Maybe that's a reason why they were opposed to her, not something about the sisterhood or women tearing each other down. There's so much in this. I mean, even this whole kind of thing where the reporter's like, isn't the problem that us women are just too catty and fighting with each other instead of supporting each other's sisters? I mean, just everything about this, from the fact that this is this ridiculous soft interview of Nombula Mokonyane, just go ahead.
The most hair-pulling of all clips is this one. And, you know, Hanekom and Motsoaledi rushed to take away the excuse that she'd present and this victimhood narrative that she was being opposed as a woman. She herself admits that they were looking for another female candidate to challenge her to be a member of the top seven, in which there's three women. So two others, including her. A 60-40 split. So it's four gents and three women. So this wasn't in opposition to the sisterhood or to female empowerment in the NEC. This coming from a lady who was dubbed Mama Action at some point. You know, she was this beacon of like the fighting spirit of women, the imbokodo of women, really, when she rose to prominence in the ANC. The women weren't very prevalent in top positions within the ANC itself at the time. But here she is, crying about, you know, being challenged for her womanhood rather than for the very, as you point out, Nick, the allegations of her receiving bribes to the tune of 2 million, which led to her buying an Aston Martin, lest we forget. She admitted to the Aston Martin, not to the fact that the 2 million was a bribe. She denies that vehemently. She denies any wrongdoing. She denies even being linked to Bosasa and says, is aggrieved about the fact that she never got to question Agritzi or Gavin Watson, the representatives of Bosasa at the time. This woman, are these ladies in News 24 serious? Fangirling over Nomvula Mokonyane, who the charges made against her are quite damning. We shouldn't want people in government for their sisterhood, but because they're ethical, corruption-free, and are ready to do the job. Disappointing of reporting from News 24 that I've seen so far.
You want to do a soft interview. I understand. You know, I think hard interviews are sometimes a bit overrated, right? Because, you know, people just get defensive and no one says anything interesting. But at the same time, surely you can pick another female leader in South Africa who doesn't have this huge blemish on their name. And then, you know, it was just embarrassing, that clip from start to finish. And I honestly, I don't think that should ever have been published. I think they should have killed it in the editing room and said this just makes everyone look bad. But I don't know. And
to the second interviewer or politics reporter who was seen quite literally fangirling over the events, or maybe recalling with excitement the events that Nomvula Mgonyane is describing, Hanukom running around, the Women's League running around to oppose her bid for DSG of the ANC,
Even that sort of bit where she says, you know, I wasn't on a slate, kind of suggesting that she's this like maverick political independent. I don't know if that's true. And in fact, I suspect that that probably isn't true. I suspect she probably was on a slate because it's very difficult to get elected in big national conferences unless you have a lot of political allies. In which case they sort of, and then they kind of uncritically go, yeah, no, you weren't. It's like, this feels like, kind of access journalism where in order to keep getting quotes and stuff from a big political figure, you always you give them soft interviews and you talk nicely to them and you let them tell their side of the story. Just sends a shiver down my spine. Anyway, but before I think I will go mad unless we talk about something else. Maybe this will drive me madder. So let's go to our last story here. And the DA's had all sorts of controversy recently because its finance spokesperson, Mark Burke, has, or not him, but his company that he was a senior, I think a founder of, and then a chairman of until he resigned quite recently. I think it was the beginning of 2026 or it was in 2025. I may be missing my... Anyway, he's not affiliated with them directly anymore. I think his brother still runs the organization, has been accused of circumventing currency controls and exchange controls by the South African Reserve Bank. Now, in response to this, the DA said that they're not casting judgment and no court has found him or his company guilty of anything. There's sort of two parts. They have to find out whether... I think for the scandal to really matter, they have to find out whether the company is guilty and also whether he was knowingly guilty as well. So it's not enough that the company is found guilty. But anyway, the DA said that they're pulling him from the finance committee and that they, you know, will wait for investigations to happen and see how things turn up. Mark Burke and his brother have basically said, look, we didn't break the law here. This is... everything we did was completely in line with what's allowed. And it's all kind of made worse, I think, by the fact that the South African Reserve Bank, I believe, is in the middle actually of changing some of these regulations as well. So this feels like a very sort of technical financial crime that it, you know, it's kind of difficult to see who precisely would be hurt by this. But the ANC and some of the other parties are taking this very seriously. And the ANC's chief whip, I believe, had this to say.
An action will have to be taken in one way or the other. And it's not the first action taken by the DA today. They were forced not so long ago to also take an action to remove the Honorable Kola Barnard from the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, because we have been very clear from the beginning that she violated her oath of office within the intelligence community. So it's the same with the Honorable Bank. It's quite clear that the crime that has been committed there, of course, which is still under an investigation, is very serious. It has serious implications for our economy. It has a huge impact to undermine economic growth in South Africa. So there was no way that they were going to act otherwise. And when we wrote to the Speaker to demand that he must be taken to the Ethics Committee, we equally copied that letter to the Democratic Alliance so that they are aware that we are very concerned about this matter and we are taking actions about it.
So is that the only cause of action that you are taking currently as far as that is concerned, or is there anything else that the ANC will be pursuing here?
It cannot be. The potential crime that has been committed here is quite serious. The ANC, and in my capacity as a chief of the ANC, I'm going to be taking this matter up with the court in the Western Cape to open a criminal case against Honorable Beck, because it's quite clear that there is more that we are yet to see in relation to the extent to which our regulations were circumvented for interests other than those of the Republic of South Africa. So we are going to take further step on this issue. The fact that he has been removed on that committee is not enough. He doesn't qualify to be a member of parliament when he engages in activities that seeks to undermine the economic growth of our country.
Undermine the economic growth of South Africa? Doesn't deserve to be a member of parliament. You know, tough stance there. I understand, you know, you need the highest ethical standards in parliament. Makone, I feel though there are more obvious targets to start with in our parliament than some maybe sort of exchange control violation that happened with crypto or whatever from a company. Anyway, your take on this?
Too many ironies with this one, Nick. The first one is, let's remember what constitutes enough act, like enough wrongdoing for the ANC to take action against one of their own members, right? Or to implement the step aside rule. It's if a member of the ANC has been formally charged by the NPA, right? But in the case of Mark Burke, reasonable suspicion by the South African Reserve Bank is what warrants this, you know, opening and laying of criminal charges against it. That's the first irony. It's of
his company, not him directly.
Of his company. Thank you. Thank you. Well, very welcome correction. Of his company, one that he's since, you know, dissolved his interests in. The second one is the category of charges this falls under, right? The circumventing or the evading of currency and exchange controls. Doesn't that ring of a certain pala-pala bell where the president quite, I think literally or similarly, did the same thing, evaded South African exchange controls by sneaking dollars through the back door and stuffing them in between his couch. But again, according to the ANC chief whip, that is not undermining South Africa's economic growth, which in and of itself is so ridiculous. It tells me he doesn't understand the charge at all or what Mark Burke's company that he since dissolved his interest in is being accused of. So how generous are they with their own members? But in this instance, in the instance of Dr. Burke, standard is infinitely higher.
Yeah, you know, if you're gonna declare Mark Burke an enemy of South Africa's economic growth, and that's a reason enough to be removed from Parliament and have criminal charges laid against you, then I think basically the entire caucus of MK, the EFF, the ANC, and a bunch of other parties probably all deserve to have charges laid against them.
Because we held them too, there'd be no
corruption. Yeah, exactly. Like if undermining South Africa's economic growth was something that got you kicked out of Parliament, we wouldn't have anyone in Parliament, as far as I'm concerned, at this point.
That is actually, I would support this chief whip if that was a proposal of a crime that should be included in the list of space, undermining South Africa's economic growth, because it's actually keeps millions of people in poverty, you know.
Yeah, no, and it's terrible, and it's exactly why we bang on about it so much. It's miserable. So, you know, I can think of a few people, starting with the president, who have done a lot to undermine South Africa's economic growth. So this is a new charge on the books. Then let's start where it's most important, I think, with the head of the...
Yeah, but no, I think this is a clear electioneering political stunt by ANC chief whip, who unfortunately is being set up, because he looks absolutely ridiculous in ignoring the big elephant, the big pala pala elephant, and how, you know, they basically did the same thing. And the president is doing all sorts of somersaults to get out of facing the portfolio committee that would decide his fate on whether, you know, what he did with pala pala is actually a crime. He ignores all of that. And with MPs outside of the ANC, the standard must be, you know, 10 times higher, which I don't mind the standard being that high. But I do take notice when reasonable grounds for investigation by the SARB warrant laying criminal charges.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rules for now, thee. Rules for thee.
I was speaking to a dear MP recently, and he was remarking on how funny it is to watch MK in particular giving these speeches filled with moral indignation and outrage at corruption and the scourge of corruption. There's something so farcical about some of this stuff.
One of the saddest moments is when former Chief Justice Zondo recounts with such sadness how he had to swear in people that he made findings against in the Zondo report. He had to swear them in.
Yeah.
As it's like O'Brien Williams. That video breaks my heart, and his sincerity, and he's clearly very troubled by it. But these are a bunch of hypocrites. I'm sure Dr. Berg will be reinstated once. Even if the company is found to have done wrongdoing, how does it affect him if he has declared that he's no longer part of the company?
So apparently some of the conduct dates back to 2021 when he was in a leadership position. So it's possible that he could be connected. But I also don't think there's much there. But we'll see. You know, that's why you have investigations and things, because you need to find out the truth of these things. Anyway, we shall see what comes of it. And with that, thank you very much for listening. We hope you found the show interesting. Just a reminder, please do follow our WhatsApp channel. It's not a WhatsApp group, because I did see some comments a little bit confused about that. It's not a WhatsApp group, it's a WhatsApp channel. People don't get your contact details from being part of this. This is just a place to get updates. It's not like there's, you know, the inane chatter that happens on, you know, big community groups and that sort of thing. There will be a link to that in the show's description in a couple of minutes once we finish up recording here. So, yeah, please do subscribe to us on WhatsApp. The Daily Friend WhatsApp channel is probably the easiest place to get quick access to all of our opinion pieces on thedailyfriend.co.za, and also to links to the show and some of our other social media content. We think it's really worthwhile stuff. So we'll see you there. And cheers, everyone. I hope you all have an excellent and wonderful weekend. Bye-bye.